Changing tack completely and moving to a new issue for the committee on IAS 21. And handing over to Bonson, who's going to tee up the paper for the committee, so agenda paper 3.
So in this paper, we discuss the exchange rate an entity uses when it translates the results in financial position of a foreign operation into its presentation currency, and the functional currency of the foreign operation is subject to a longer-term lack of exchangeability with other currencies. Those circumstances currently exist in Venezuela. Some preparers have told us that the use of the Venezuelan Bolivar's official exchange rate is creating significant distortion in the financial statement. Those distortions mainly consist of an overstatement of the relative share of the Venezuelan foreign operations in the consolidated financial statement. The concurrent application of the requirements in IAS 29 increases the severity of those distortions over time. In the light of these circumstances, diversity in reporting practices has arisen. Our research identified three main reporting practices as outlined in paragraph 11b and appendix B to the paper. We have set out our preliminary technical analysis of the matter in paragraph 31 to 55 of the paper. In our view, the set of circumstances prevailing in Venezuela indicates that the Venezuelan bolivar is subject to a longer-term lack of exchangeability that is extreme. There are almost no exchange transactions occurring using the legal exchange mechanism available, and, accordingly, in our view, this situation implies that the official exchange rates do not meet the definition of a spot exchange rate in IAS 21. Because IAS 21 requires the use of the spot exchange rate, which is the exchange rate for immediate delivery, we think an entity would then estimate that rate. I will now pause here and ask whether you have any comments on this analysis, which is question 1 on page 22 of the paper.
Okay, so this is a preliminary discussion, it's a future discussion. So who wants to be the first to kick off the preliminary discussion on this new topic? Everyone's a little shy on me.
Exchange rate and the official exchange rate and the actual exchange. At the end of the day, these two things just had no bearing on each other. What we generally found is that companies did not apply the, those who continued to consolidate did not apply the official exchange rate. The view taken was very simple. They said that they believed you could get an exchange rate, so if you use the wording out of IAS 21, which I know we've used there, they said there was a rate. And the rate, if you tried to look at the spot rate, they said you could get a spot rate for immediate exchange. That may not have been the official rate, but there was a rate you could get, and that was what they referred to at that stage as the black market rate, which is kind of the rate you would use to actually get money out of it. So that's the first thing I thought sharing that. The second thing, which is quite interesting, which we haven't really addressed in this paper, is what we found was that as the currency depreciated to a stage where it was barely usable, it started calling into question the functional currency of many of the companies reporting there. And the reason for that was when you've got a currency that just cannot be used at all, we found most of those companies to a degree were adopting the US dollar. And we actually started seeing what was starting to drive what was driving the country, it really wasn't the Zim dollar at all. Just all the US dollar started actually pushing the, if you look at all the factors around functional currency, you know, all the regulation, all the sales, things were slowly which were starting to pin themselves to that. So I won't pretend to be an expert on the Venezuelan issue, but I just didn't know that something else that the staff had come across where, you know, the question was, is this still a functional currency when the currency starts disappearing and everybody's really starting to, as much as they may use it, really using that currency. So those are kind of my first comments on the first bit of the paper.
Okay, thank you. Jim?
All right. I think things start to stop with a very clear analysis on this rather unique. The fact is that I don't see it as a fact issue. It could be a problem issue. Given the fact that the criteria, though I personally have limited knowledge about the country mentioned here, but if the government or the jurisdiction or the sovereign power to seize your right to touch your interest or your asset in their territory, you lose control on the economic value. It doesn't matter how much activity or how much you earn in that territory, you just don't get it. So, on top of that, you have the hyperinflation, you have the actual rates versus the quoted rates. And there's no way any company or all the companies would have a reasonable estimate of any of this way. So for me, after reading this paper and these options given, I think I tend to agree with the Booth's comment and practice. Deconsolidation should be something we give a clear way out. Since on top of that, I think we should also ask if the identity is significant enough, they should disclose their operations and their financial results in local currency, especially so that there's a comparison across the board. All these entities have a financial theory. They won't have comparison local numbers, that's it. It doesn't matter how much it's worth at your reported currency, because there is none. There's no exchangeability whatsoever. So, for the exchange rate, by the word of it, supposed to be used to exchange, you cannot use as exchange. The rate doesn't mean much. So, the suggestion would be that we would have something such a new what the society or what companies guideline leaning towards the deconsolidation and disclosure.
Okay, thank you, Jim. It was a little bit hard to hear, but I think we got the main points. Bonnie?
So unfortunately or unfortunately, I do have some experience with Venezuela, and I think my when I read the paper, it was very consistent with our experience with Venezuela. I think what I continue to see is that even companies within the same industry have very different facts and circumstances and can come to conclusions. The big three automakers each have or had subsidiaries in Venezuela, and we all came to very different conclusions because our facts and circumstances were very different. I also think that it is very industry dependent. Depending on if you have products in an industry that the government calls essential versus non-essential. And I think perhaps I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but I think we need to be very, very, very careful in providing any specific guidance, even if it is specific to Venezuela, because I believe that there are some, each company has to look at their own facts and circumstances, look at what rate they have or could transact at. And I believe that the variability that was observed by the staff as they were doing their analysis is representative of the different facts and circumstances as I understand them to be. I also think that deconsolidation has been and could be absolutely supportable, again, based on facts and circumstances. While it's not, I agree with the staff that it's not directly related to or may not be supportable in and of itself from a long-term lack of exchangeability on the currency, make that as one significant factor, particularly if there's product that has to come into the country in order for the subsidiary to make product and make money, that the lack of exchangeability has a very direct impact on the entity's ability to operate and for a company to be able to control its subsidiary. So I don't disagree with the staff kind of analysis of the facts in Venezuela. I think it's a very tenuous situation. It changes regularly in terms of what's happening from an economic perspective and how that impacts the different businesses. But I think it depends on what industry you're in. I think it depends on your specific circumstances. So I want to tread carefully here. I understand the need for guidance or the request for guidance, but I do believe that based on existing standards, there is a path to determine what an appropriate treatment is. And I think disclosure is absolutely critical and important in being able to explain what you've done and why you've done it. And I think that was probably the area personally that we spent the most time in it, analyzing is what's the appropriate disclosure so that people can get a true perspective of what's going on.
Mary's going to ask your question, Bonnie.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, Bonnie, I understand and think it's helpful to understand to hear from you, somebody who's wrestled with it, about the facts and circumstances and some of the considerations. One of the things I found very helpful personally thinking about this issue from the staff paper, the question I'm asking you is, whether you agree it's helpful or not in terms of thinking about the way forward, is what the staff brought out about the focus in IS 21 on closing rate and how that links to spot rate as an input to the kind of considerations you're talking about in terms of whether there is a rate available and what rate it is that you're supposed to be focused on. Is that something that you agree or disagree, or did you think about it the same way I did? It really is just asking whether or not you thought that was something that came out of this paper as an anchor for the kind of facts and circumstances analysis you're thinking about making.
In terms of the rate to use, that was always a discussion. Maybe I should just make a statement that in our particular circumstance, at the end of 2017, we deconsolidated our subsidiary. There's a couple of paragraphs in our 20F related to that. But prior to that, when we were still accounting for it, our subsidiary was US dollar functional. But we did often have the discussion on the rate because you had, monetary assets, particularly cash. So there was a lot of discussion about rates. I think that the way the paper described it, we maybe didn't think about it in exactly the same way, but I think we got to a similar conclusion in terms of what was the right rate to use. And I think we followed primarily kind of the thought process on what's the rate that we could get money out, whether that was a stated rate or something else. We did have those discussions about what rate to use, and we disclosed what rate we did use to measure our operations because we thought that was important for a reader to understand what we did and why.
No, and that's very helpful to me hearing that comment because I had not thought about this issue in the context of an entity that had had a functional currency that was other than the local currency. And so I think that's
yeah.
Maybe a nuance we have to think about bringing into an analysis.
Yeah, I think as I was listening to Bruce in his description of Zimbabwe, which I don't have any experience with that particular situation, but there was a lot of similarities to kind of our thought process, particularly in terms of what was the functional currency of our entity. And that was something that we've been dealing with for quite a long time.
Thank you. Reinhardt?
I thought the paper was a very good paper in terms of discussing the various issues and providing a potential approach to dealing with the specific circumstances in Venezuela. But it did have a couple of comments on the analysis, and one is that I thought the paper presumed that if there was a restoration of the exchange rate, official exchange rate, time the financial statements are issued, that you would use that rate. And the paper makes reference to US GAAP guidance in that respect. I certainly can understand that in the context of the situation, for example, that the US GAAP guidance looks at, which is the rate didn't exist or wasn't trading at the, it wasn't the closing rate at the balance sheet date. But it was restored a few days later. But in an instance where you've got months, perhaps, between your balance sheet date and when the rate is restored, I think you wouldn't necessarily default to using that rate because there could have been a lot of things that have happened in the meantime that would cause one to look to other factors besides using that rate. So that was one of the comments I had. And then secondly, in terms of approach to the situation in Venezuela, I agree with a lot of what the staff paper suggests. However, I'd be very careful to not, when we move forward, come to a conclusion that one should have used that potential approach, because when we last addressed the Venezuela issue in 2014, we said IAS 21 was not clear. And so there are, as the paper notes, the different ways, different approaches people have used, and Bonnie's explained that as well, depending on their facts and circumstances. Some have used an official rate because they just used the words in IAS 21. And yes, it does result in some interesting financial statement effects. But what I'm trying to say is when on the way forward, I wouldn't want to suggest that was inappropriate because of the lack of clarity as to what should be done. And then the third point I would make is in terms of looking at how one might develop a rate, I certainly understand and agree with what the staff said in terms of looking to the purchase power parity theater theory, I should say. But I think there are other potential factors one could look to, such as unofficial parallel market transactions, the dynamics of how the official rates have been developed, maybe even the first subsequent rate that has been restored when exchangeability is restored. So I think there's other factors that perhaps one could look to, again, getting back to similar to Bonnie's point, look to your specific facts and circumstances. But those were my comments.
Thank you. Andrew?
Thank you. Just a couple of points and an overall comment about what we might be doing. In paragraph 34 of the paper, we talk a bit about the question of immediate delivery. And I think it might be helpful for the staff to look at that a little bit more widely. And the reason for that is that some might read that as being, if it's immediate delivery, you have to exchange it right now. And that's not something that I've done in Venezuela for some time, but you have in the past been able to get money out even though there's been a bit of a delay. And I think that in that context, you're really looking at the rate that you're able to access. And that maybe picks up part of Bonnie's point. That it depends on the facts and circumstances. So in Venezuela, depending on which company you were, depending on the industry you were in, depending on what you were doing, you either might or might not have been able to get money out in the past, and the rate would have been different depending on which route you took. And the way that we've dealt with it in practice is to look at each company and say, how could you get the money out, and what rate could you ultimately use? And taking immediate delivery to be the rate you can use in the end if you immediately at the reporting date start the process to get your money out. And that perhaps also links into paragraph 26, and that talks about circumstances where there are several different exchange rates and you look to the one which you could use. So I think it's quite important for us to focus on that. On the exchange rate to be used, I did agree with the staff, again in paragraph 34, that the closing rate would be a rate available through a legal exchange mechanism at the reporting date. And although I understand what may have been done in Zimbabwe, I'm a little bit nervous of having any reference to a rate which is not some kind of official rate if you're looking at one where you can actually change money. I would think personally I would draw back quite a lot from a black market rate, for example. Because I think that you have to have a legal rate versus the overall point, though, is that in Venezuela we've got some very specific circumstances which I think it would be valuable for us to address. What I'm a bit nervous about is the potential for other countries perhaps to look at what we might say and say, that's a bit like us, me too. Because there are other countries that I can think of that we are dealing with in practice at the moment where there are perhaps three or four different rates. However, the key difference between those countries and Venezuela at the moment is you can access those rates and you can get your money out using them. And so I'd want there to be a very clear distinction that Venezuela is a particular case, it's a one-off case. And for us to structure and analyse what we say in a way that you can apply by analogy to something that really is substantively different.
Thank you. Martin, did you have your hand up?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have to say, probably I have not heard each and everything that clearly before, so it might be that there is some repetitions in my statements now. But anyhow, I mean, from a practical perspective, we also have operations in Venezuela, and I believe that the explanation that guided the staff paper fits very well with regard to the exchange rate to be used. I agree a little bit with Bonnie that it might be fact and circumstance specific. reason for that is that, that some industries also got, say, a favorable exchange rate guaranteed by the government. But unfortunately, then are also these guarantees, more or less, were not fulfilled in the future. So this might also have an impact on the overall evaluation. I believe that the approach, if there is no applicable op rate, consider what might be the next exchange rate, while taking into consideration inflation rate, is a very, very valuable one. I believe that is material exposure to a very huge extent, but specifically they and I do, there is no applicable spot UK. I would expect that the exchange rate used is supposed to generate an Atlantic investment. And I still have issues with the independency that requires 29 plus minus 1. We had that discussion already 3 or 4 years ago, I think that's the topic the last time. And coming out with that, we still believe that the inflation rate you use under our time, and we heard today that so my inflation rate might better. In a way, that also is a matching with at least reflected the consideration for the rate you are using for my virus. Otherwise, I'm all bit or say that way around. A good explanation why such different for creating a kind of industry, and otherwise only create invention. So probably this is what has to be taken.
Okay, thank you, Martin. Tony.
Thanks, Sue. I think like others, I thought this was a good paper. I think I recognise the situation described in the paper as the one that we come across in practice. And I agree there are a number of things that you might think about if you have a subsidiary or a business in Venezuela, probably starting with whether the functional currency does remain the Venezuelan Bolivar. And then you might think about, given the circumstances more broadly in Venezuela, whether you still have control. But I'd be very reluctant to revisit any of the guidance in any of the standards around functional currency or around control, because I think we're trying to deal with a very narrow situation in Venezuela, and thinking again about what's in IS-10 or saying, IFRS-10 or saying that just don't consolidate businesses in Venezuela doesn't seem like the right solution to the problem that we are trying to address. Like Reinhardt, I think I'd probably have been a little bit softer in the paper around saying that the official rate is not a spot rate because of long-term lack of exchangeability, because I think a number of companies continue to use it as being the rate that they feel IS-21 leads you towards. And so I might have been inclined to say, well, there may be circumstances in which the long-term lack of exchangeability, or there may be circumstances in which there is, and therefore it doesn't meet the definition of a spot rate. Moving on, I think, given the circumstances, I agree there may be companies that say this doesn't meet the definition of the spot rate, and that it would make sense to estimate. And then I think there are a number of data points that you would take into account. So does the company have access to a preferential rate? You might take into account an exchange rate sometime after the year end if that seems to reflect the circumstances. You would take into account inflation. I don't think I would ever base it entirely off a rate that was not legal, but I think maybe there is a data point, like when you're making any other estimate in IFRS, you would take into account all of the relevant factors in making an estimate. And so I think I
agreement with staff that it would be helpful to provide some guidance or some educational material that says there might be circumstances in which you estimate. I think what's important there is to be very clear that it's a very, very narrow scope. At the moment it's Venezuela. 10 years ago it was Zimbabwe, in a few years maybe there'll be another one, but it's not everybody else. And then maybe being helpful that when you do make an estimate, you take into account all of the relevant data points that might be relevant to making an estimate.
Thank you, Tony. Young Su?
I think this issue is very serious problem for Venezuela and Venezuela-related companies. I understand that, and I was able to find it by reading the staff paper. In that sense, that paper was very good. But I'm not quite sure. I think my idea would be very similar to Tumu, but I'm not quite sure whether we have to revisit this issue again or not. The first reason why I think revisiting is not that proper is because this issue is restricted to only one area, Venezuela. There could be many companies related that has the business with Venezuela, but still I think related companies are not that many. And the second reason why I'm reluctant is because, you know, once we get into that, solution is not going to be easy to come out. You know, in one of the paper, the staff paper, staff says something about the estimated exchange rate. And I think the staff was trying to provide some kind of guidance on estimated exchange rate. But estimated exchange rate is very difficult to define or formulate. It's a very broad issue that affects so many other currency issues. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is that this issue doesn't seem to be so small or narrow. So we should be very careful in revisiting this issue. But if we decide to revisit this issue, as Tony said, what we have to do is to narrow down the scope as much as possible. Okay, that's all.
Thank you. Bertrand?
Like some, the paper is very, very good. It enabled me to get a good overview of those extreme cases, like in Zimbabwe or in the past or in Venezuela. I have not experienced it myself, but I think surely the outcome of reading and analyzing the staff paper is surely that when you cannot conclude that the functional currency is not another currency than the local one, because your operations are mostly done locally and you cannot use another functional currency than the local currency, or when you conclude that you cannot, for various reasons, deconsolidate the subsidiary, then effectively you have to do something. And I think surely estimates of what is then the closing rate is surely the proper solution. We can surely do something in this area by narrowing effectively the scope. If we were to decide to do an interpretation, for instance, we could surely narrow down the scope of the interpretation. Interpretation of or something else, whatever. Maybe just a comment on what is meant or what could be meant by estimates. I think it's on paragraph 49 to 54. And I think 51, notably, paragraph 51 states something that is effectively interesting. Consequently, an entity might need to estimate the inflation rate by, for example, referring to information provided by third parties, such as academics or international organizations. And effectively, from the benchmark I did in France, effectively it happens that most of the time when there is an estimated rate used, it's an estimate that is based on a third party's information. So not just an estimate that is that cannot be, let's say, controlled. So I think that in terms of internal control or auditability of what the company is doing, I think it can effectively third party's information to compute the estimate of the closing rate used could be something valuable to put forward in any work, any additional work you might decide to do. And then maybe just a word on deconsolidation. Effectively, when I did the benchmark in France, some pointed out the fact that it might be effectively useful to do something around this. And I've noted effectively what the staff paper is saying in paragraph 55b. Accordingly, the matter described in this paper is not a circumstance that in isolation would result in the deconsolidation of Venezuelan subsidiaries. I think effectively deconsolidation in this instance wouldn't be just for this specific reason, but maybe a set of circumstances might lead to this conclusion ultimately, and probably the exchange rate to use might be one of the circumstances analyzed, but just in isolation, I quite concur with the staff view on that.
Okay, thanks. Mary, then Bob, and then Bonnie. So Mary?
I'd be happy to wait until after Bob. Okay.
Bob? Can't hear you, Bob. Bob, we can't hear you. Bob, you're talking to yourself. Bob, you need your headphones on. Okay, we're going to move to Bonnie and then hopefully Bob will realize we're ignoring him. Bonnie?
I'm sure it's really good what you say. I wanted to clarify that I don't believe that the committee should do anything in this respect, because I think there's too many variables for companies, and I think that the existing guidance is sufficient for companies to apply to their own facts and circumstances. So I having dealt with kind of the US GAAP and the IFRS analysis for this particular situation, in this respect, I appreciate the principles-based format of IFRS, because I think it gives the ability to look at the substance, look at the facts and circumstances that are applicable to a specific company, and apply the guidance as it exists to come to the appropriate conclusion. So I wanted to make that clear. I feel very strongly that we should not do something.
Okay, and Bonnie, I'm going to ask you a question, and then Bob, we're going to see if we can hear you this time. So Bonnie, do you think that, so you seem to be in a position where you feel that you can work out what you need to do, the path through to get to what works? But do you think it would be do you think it would be unhelpful for us to do something like this? So you don't need help.
It could be, and the reason I say that is because if a company has taken a different decision than what is where we finally get to, then it could come into question prior conclusions.
Okay.
So I really believe that companies have dealt with the situation based on their specific facts and circumstances. And I think the variability that the staff saw is likely appropriate because there are different facts and circumstances.
Okay.
So that's my personal view.
Okay, that's helpful, thank you. Bob, we couldn't hear you last time, I think because you took your headphones off.
Sorry, I think it was, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I failed to take it off of mute, so sorry. I'm not sure I'm going to be as remarkable as it was before, but I think the staff paper was very well done. I commend the staff, really good research. I agree with many of the points that have been made around the table, that it's going to be very facts and circumstance based, and not everybody's going to have the same analysis. With respect to some of the issues that have been brought up about functional currency and deconsolidation or control, I do think there's enough guidance in the literature there as to what to do in those situations. But the situation I think we need to deal with is when the legal rate is not available. Can you estimate an exchange rate, or under what circumstances can you estimate an exchange rate? I support the objective of telling people that they can estimate an exchange rate, but I'm peeking ahead now to question two. I'm not sure there's enough in, or I don't believe there's enough in IFRS 21 to tell people when you can estimate, and so I'm not sure you can do an agenda decision here. My preference, my view would be that we need to do some standard setting. Again, peeking even further ahead, if we were to do an agenda decision, I would be interested in the staff's analysis on how transition would work. The people, as I understand, who moved to estimation now, they did it on a prospective basis. Would that still work under an agenda decision?
Okay,
well,
was it with Crystal? Mary, do you want to come in now?
If I'm not stepping in front of any other committee members, yes. Just,
I'm going to go to the funds next.
Okay. As I reflect on the paper and think about what I had, I did have a bit of concern about people, how people might understand this discussion in terms of calling into question past decisions, when I think something that's come out very clearly from this discussion, also raised in the paper, is there are a lot of facts and circumstances that have to be considered, especially the point that several have made about different companies having different access to exchange rates. But I think that also has an important point that shouldn't be lost sight of, is this is not something you had to have looked at once 3 years ago and you're done, because it seems that the facts and circumstances continue to change. I mean, Martin had a point about certain companies having been promised, you know, guaranteed certain preferential rates, and then the guarantee not actually having been honored. If I followed Martin's comments properly, I think rather than calling into question the past use of the, you know, the appropriateness of the past use of the guaranteed rate when people had reason to believe the guarantee would be honored, it says that there's another event in another period that has to be accounted for about the failure to fulfill the guarantee as promised. So I, you know, from my perspective, want to be clear that the discussion is sending signals to people about considering facts and circumstances, but updating that. And Bob, I think, you know, you said prospective application in terms of switching to the estimated rates. Presumably that was in the context of having concluded that there is in that period a determination that there is long-term lack of exchangeability. So that seems like something that could very often be the appropriate conclusion. I did, however, want to ask people to think about, and I may be overly fixated on this as it was the subject of my question to Bonnie before, whether there is additional helpful guidance versus the 2014 agenda decision in terms of giving people a clearer focus in terms of what they are looking to when they are making their assessment of whether or not there is long-term lack of exchangeability. Not what to do when there is, but that very basic question of when there is long-term lack of exchangeability. And I agree with those who commended the staff in terms of the quality of the research here, in terms of coming back to the focus on closing rate and how that relates to spot rate as the benchmark both for making the assessment and if they are concluding that they have to estimate, that's what you do. Apart from the reminder that I think Bertrand cited in paragraph 55B, I doubt that there's anything that would be helpful to add at this point about trying to re-examine the criteria for consolidation or deconsolidation. That is a complex and judgmental fact pattern, and I think that's not what the staff was envisioning would be the subject of any further guidance. So it's importance of facts and circumstances, assessing whether facts and circumstances have changed, thinking about whether there's anything that can be added to the 2014 decision in terms of what the benchmark is for assessing when there is long-term lack of exchangeability, and when you conclude that there is, what your reference point is for what you are trying to estimate, as some of the things that I take away from both this discussion and the paper that the interpretation committee might be able to help with.
Okay, thank you, Mary. I'm going to come back to Andrew, and I think Bruce might have his hand up again, but first I'm just going to give the people who are on the phones a chance to see if they've got anything they want to add, because I know it's difficult for you to get in. So, Mikhail, did you have anything you wanted to say?
Yes, maybe I think that we had that discussion in 2014, and even if it's good to come with responses to specific problems, we couldn't get to any conclusion at that time, if I understand correctly. And I don't really see that we should come to a conclusion this time either, because it's the same issues on the table. So I agree with you, Brian, and Ronnie, and Andrew, and also, and so on, that this issue should probably not be opened up again, or very limited.
Okay, thank you. Sandy?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Bonnie said. You know, we're debating the question of foreign currency here, and I get that we're trying to get some degree of comparability and guidance, but to me that seems like a bit of a false pursuit. Because I think the foreign currency is just an indicator of other economic things that are going on. I'm not sure the purchasing power is parity in the paper, and I didn't spend a great deal of time with it applied here because of the market structure right now. But I didn't spend much time on that. You know, I think the real issue for investors is, and I understand that we're trying to provide guidance and interpret the standards. But the reality is there's an overarching principle, which is decision usefulness. And that investors want to understand in the bottom line whether there's any cash coming to the parent, which they invest in, from the subsidiary. And so I think that the facts and circumstances and how you know, management applies them is particularly important because that's what management should ultimately care about as well. So I see the discussion of comparability, but you know the reality of it is that you don't know, looking at that particular list, what people's particular circumstances are and whether that's an indicator of their circumstances or you know, lack of comparability. But you know, the users of the financial statements are really going to want to see what the assets and liabilities are of this subsidiary, how they might be exchanged, and ultimately they want to know if any cash can come back to the parent. So I don't know if resolving the foreign currency rate is going to resolve the broader question. It might make it easier for the preparers to feel like they're covered in an audit, but I don't think that it's necessarily meeting the objective of decision usefulness. So I'm in Bonnie's camp of not doing anything. I think people have taken a decision in a position, and they probably explained it if it was significant to investors already, and so I believe this.
Okay, thank you. Can I just check whether any of the observers on the phone have anything they want to add? So Jennifer or Tom, anything you want to say? No? So,
John,
why don't you
go ahead?
Hi, it's John here. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay, sorry, John, yes?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, just a couple of comments. First of all, let me know, I tried to commend the staff, like others, and I think it's a very well-written paper and very well-researched, so congratulations to them. Just a couple of comments. I'm concerned at the implication in the paper that IS21 has an answer to this issue, because when we discussed this in 2014, we concluded that IS21 did not deal with the issue of long-term lack of exchangeability. And certain paragraphs of the paper imply that IS21 already deals with this, and you would need to estimate an exchange rate, and I don't think it does deal with this. So that's one concern I have. I don't have any objections to taking this on. I do think there might be benefit in actually addressing the circumstances where there is long-term lack of exchangeability. But I think it would need standard setting. I agree with the comments that Bob made, but I don't think this could be done through an agenda decision. I think it requires standard setting, because I don't think IS21 deals with it currently. I do think there's a risk of sort of inappropriate extrapolation of this to other fact patterns, where people want to use estimation techniques for an exchange rate rather than the rate that actually is legal in the jurisdiction. Venezuela is a very specific set of circumstances, quite at the extreme end. We obviously had similar situations in Zimbabwe a number of years ago. I can see justification for using estimation techniques in those situations, but lots of other situations where people have suggested estimation techniques, I don't think they're justified. So I think if we were to do anything, I would like to see it being extremely narrow in what we were dealing with, and not opening up a general right to estimate exchange rates more generally. So those are my comments. I do think it would potentially be useful to deal with it, even though people have arrived at their answer, but I do think it would require standard setting.
Okay, thank you, John. Tom and Jennifer, maybe...
Yeah, Tom speaking here. I would like to echo what John was saying, that we do not believe that an agenda decision could be used here, but a standard setting activity would be necessary. And we think it's very important to have a very narrow scope. In view of what was said by some others, that the differences in accounting treatment observed by staff could be justified by different factors, circumstances, that could be true, but as an enforcer, I'm a little bit reluctant to accept it without having done any further research, because it can be true, but it's also possible that in comparable circumstances, different accounting treatments are applied. But from that point of view, standard setting activity might be useful. And we had a small question to start based on the example which was provided in Appendix B, which is very useful. But we were not sure that we understood it. It is said that the effects of the changes in exchange rate and changes in purchase power should be accounted for in equity. For the Article 21 part, we believe that there should be an LCI. But for the general part level accounting adjustment, we are not sure that Article 29 is clear that it should be booked in LCI or in equity reserve. So maybe that could be further clarified. Thank you.
Okay, Tom, if it's okay, in the interest of time, maybe we'll come back on that later or take that specific point offline.
That's no problem.
Okay, thank you. Jennifer, I couldn't hear. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yes, I'll just add a couple of points. So from our regulator perspective, we have dealt with different fact patterns for companies in Venezuela. Most of them have been under U.S. GAAP. And like others have stated, there are lots of different facts and circumstances that are important to consider. On the IFRS side, we are aware that some companies have been estimating exchange rates. We have not weighed in or come to a step conclusion on those, primarily because of materiality. Just didn't have a material impact, but we are aware that those are out there. And with respect to the different options going forward, like others, we questioned whether, given the 2014 agenda decision that stated that the IAS 21 doesn't address the longer term market exchangeability, we also wondered whether an agenda decision would be the appropriate path, thought perhaps some sort of standard setting might be needed in this area. That's all.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer.
Sorry, I was just going to add a comment, if it's helpful just to the discussion that, I know some have mentioned maybe whether, what do we think we could do in a general decision, what standard setting we needed, and sort of with some reference to the 2014 discussion. And maybe I just, from the staff's perspective, maybe echo some of what Mary said, that not the difference I see, but it's almost like if we thought, or at least from the staff's perspective, what we thought we might be able to do in the context of the requirements in 21 could only be done in the context of a very narrow, some people have talked about an extremely narrow case. And I suppose how I view that is not necessarily different from what the committee discussed in 2014, but it's more the committee's discussion that whilst it was on, I think, a similar set of facts, it hadn't. First of all, I think maybe the facts 3.5 years ago weren't as extreme as they are now, but also obviously at that time there was just some words in the agenda decision that just talked about a longer term lack of exchangeability without then specifying exactly what was meant, how narrow those circumstances were. So I suppose I only wanted to emphasise that our thinking, if we what we thought maybe potentially we could do within the words of 21 would be in the context of it being an extremely narrow set of circumstances that would be described in order to then sort of have some words that talks about the words in 21 and the definitions in 21.
So you've made Bonnie put her hand up now. So I've got Andrew, Bruce, Michael, Bonnie, and then I'm going to try and wrap up unless anybody's got something they desperately want to add to the mix for the staff to go away and think about, because I'm just looking at the clock. But Andrew?
Thanks. On the question of scoping, I see this not just as one way, is it Venezuela or is it not? And I share some of the other concerns that have been expressed, that if we say something in Venezuela, we need to be extremely careful that it's not then taken by someone else and applied in a book or elsewhere. And so one question perhaps for the staff to think about is, do they think IAS 21 prohibits the use of an estimated rate? I'm not sure it does. And that then takes me into one potential route, which might then fit with some of the practical experience we see as well with Venezuela, because we wouldn't necessarily need to tell people how to estimate an exchange rate. it would more be the circumstances in which you get to a position where you find that you need to. And that would then allow us to be very, very narrow in the scope that we covered. And it would address the issue from the other direction that I'm looking at, that I'm looking at a number of different countries that would love to estimate an exchange rate. And if there was someone who could put out that said, here are the very, very narrow set of circumstances where you might think about it, and then off you go and look at your own facts and circumstances and do it, it gives us something that can be used elsewhere. It is much wider scope in preventing it from being used inappropriately elsewhere.
Thanks, Andrew. Bruce.
Yeah, thanks. I'll jump in. I was just going to comment on the, I think, and maybe ask the people, like, is there anything we can do? I would be very anti this as an agenda decision, and I'll tell you why. This is not a new issue. As I mentioned, we addressed this when we had the Zimbabwe issue many years ago, and the conclusions back then were that there was not enough guys. The other thing I wanted to point out about why I think we have to do it is actually not the Venezuelan issue, but an issue that was brought up in the paper. That is that people are saying we need something now because it's an urgent issue. And the problem generally is that this issue only comes up when it's become an urgent issue. Which means if we choose to do nothing now, we're not going to hear about it again until another country gets to the stage and we once again have the same issue being brought to us. So I'm saying over the many years I've been involved in stand setting, this question has come up constantly in various places. I think we need to address it, but I think unfortunately for the Venezuelan situation, I'm not convinced there's a quick fix right now. So I would have said, leave as Bonnie is, leave as it is at the moment, but I do think that we still should address it. And it may take us 18 months, 2 years to get a solution with another year of implementation, but at least going forward there will be something. This issue is going to arise again.
Comments I would have made, I think I would tend more towards thinking this needs some standard setting as well, because it's rather complex to deal with a general decision. But also perhaps to Bonnie's point, things other people have been saying, clearly to be future-proof it needs to not just be about a particular country, but about facts and circumstances. But also, I think what I hear people saying is that it's about the facts and circumstances of particular entities in particular countries. And that might help with Bonnie's issue that people have applied it to their own facts and circumstances. So I don't think people are suggesting, I don't think we're suggesting that we should say that all entities with operations in Venezuela should do this, because that's not necessarily appropriate, because they will have different access to exchange rates and the like. So something's a bit narrower, as Andrew suggested, about when you might have lack of exchangeability, you might need to estimate, even building on what Tony added about these are the sorts of things you might consider, you know, that might be helpful to people, I think.
Okay, thanks, Michael. And Bonnie, I'm going to give you the last word.
Yeah, Michael, I think, took my point. And that's, I don't think we should address Venezuela specifically. I think that we should address where there is a lack of long-term exchangeability, because I think that's the situation that seems to recur, not regularly, but enough that it needs to be addressed, because that's the specific circumstance that's not addressed within the guidance currently. So, as Bruce mentioned, it's not Venezuela specifically, but it's the concept of lack of long-term exchangeability that happens on occasion that I think we need to address. That's the question.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. All right, Valton, I think you've got plenty to think about there. So we look forward to seeing what you do with all of that, as I'm sure you do. Now, Trina. Yeah, wait, you're not going to do the work in progress? Oh, sorry.